And now we're looking back at misplaced anger around the fact that this professional nurse called out their unprofessionalism. What?
Yeah.
Can what? We actually call out the actual stuff that was happening in real life at the time and not the series? That's the thing, because now if we concentrate on the series, we're ignoring the real stuff that's happening on the ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Adam Levine, Adam says, Freud supposedly says sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. That's from Adam. He didn't say that, did he? Did he really?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to leave that to the expert in studio, David.
I haven't read that. Maybe he did. But I think Adam's making an important point.
Right.
That sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And maybe Adam's referring to the phallic nature of a cigar. That we don't have to interpret, you know, everything. That let's just take things on face value sometimes and just go with it. Because, as I say, if you pick things apart, you will find. You'll always find. And it's obviously there's a place. But it's not always necessary. It really isn't. Because, as we say in our community,
a cigar is just a cigar.
And what? Caused sorrows. Unnecessary sorrows.
Right, unnecessary aggravation. And yeah, exactly. What good comes of that? Clifford says it's beyond ridiculous. Karen says, I just love your music. So that's good enough, as well as MASH is a classic. I just found it interesting.
And the thing is that isn't art used to document history? And I feel like if we now want to wipe out everything, like, you know, what they're doing with some Disney films, where they're literally taking away some scenes, aren't you wiping
which one,
out?
We spoke about that.
Yes.
I don't remember which one it was.
I can't remember. It wasn't Mulan or something. It could have been, or one of them. But are you not trying to wipe out history? Because the thing is, what are future generations or even us? Because that's the thing about history, is that we're supposed to learn from what has happened in the past. We're supposed to see the progress. How are we supposed to see progress if you are removing parts of the times back then? I don't understand.
Well, what I find astounding is our own arrogance. That we assume that because we feel it and think it now in 2020, we are the experts of all the past and all of the future. And that there's not going to be any progress from now. That nobody in 2040 is going to look back and say, what idiots you were in 2020. The arrogance of this, that we can judge history in this way. And it's not judging history in terms of judging the atrocities of history, because that's really not what this is about. And we're not saying that things of the past, whether it's a Holocaust, whether it's apartheid, we're not saying these things are okay. We're not saying that, well, it was acceptable at the time. It wasn't. And but that has got to be the measure. So was something acceptable at the time? Apartheid was not acceptable at the time. The Holocaust, of course, was not acceptable at the time. But when you look at something in terms of relationships between men and women and how women were portrayed and how men might have behaved and all of these things, yes, it might not be how we behave today, but to become so arrogant about it.
That we think we have reached our highest
self. That's it. We've arrived.
The highest level of consciousness or wokeness.
It's unbelievable. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 0618951019. When I read this article, and I generally really am not a massive fan of The Guardian, and certainly this underscores why. But when I saw this, I thought this is actually an unbelievably dangerous article, because now we can go back and look at absolutely everything. Do we need to throw out a whole lot of our Shakespearean plays because they represented relationships that weren't healthy relationships?
I have so much anxiety just thinking about the many problematic things.
I know
that
this
we
is
to go back
this,
to.
This is a can of worms on a whole different level.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, I think it's about learning. I think we look back and we want to, in retrospect, see what we did in the past. But this sounds like a very angry article. A very angry article, and excessively so. So, yeah, absolutely. Look back, learn from your past, understand. But, boy, to take something like MASH, which is certainly, I'm not meant to, I think, offend anyone.
And even if it was, and comedy does offend, I offend people.
Sure.
Sometimes with my humor. Sometimes even deliberately, because that evokes a reaction, and then we can have a conversation that it might be worth having. You know, that's the job. That's the role. And without provocateurs in any environment, we are going to become stupid.
Absolutely, because everything is going to be sterilized, just completely sterile. And that's not a healthy position to be in, where everything is so PC. Everything is just because we have to think about how people feel. You know, again, people need to be challenged.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's, and that's how we, you know, that's how we grow as people.
Colin says, MASH, regarding MASH in a war situation, woke is not a priority. And Mike Lubo says an interesting thing. MASH was written as a response to a dumb war and place called Vietnam. It was a satire on circumstances. I feel it did bring a ridiculous awakening to the people from afar. That's Mike Lubo. Mike, I just wanted, was MASH definitely Vietnam or was it Korea?
Korea,
I think, I don't know why, Mike, I think it was Korea and not Vietnam, but we can verify that. And Dov says, do we need to throw out the Torah now? There are many bad stories in there. Actually, I have to tell you, Dov, the older I get, the more insight I find that that Torah or biblical stories have. I have to tell you that over and over again, I'm starting to see an unbelievable insight that the stories reflect around human nature. And it starts off with Adam and Eve and taking responsibility, Adam blaming Eve, Eve blaming the serpent, not taking responsibility. Then they blame God because, you know, and to me, those stories actually are enormously, enormously powerful. Melinda says, Howard, there's a whole Shiur series waiting to happen, Insights of Torah in 2020. So, yes, absolutely, there absolutely is. And I do want to get on to do something like that. Brian says, it was definitely the Korean War. And so does Michael and Charles. So do Michael and Charles. Charles, indeed, I think that it was. So, David, I wanted to ask you this morning, one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is it's very difficult as parents to have situations. We spoke about with Anthony Reich, these two young women they did commit suicide, but part of the reason was they felt they couldn't cope with some of the stringency of their environment. And we see many cases over, and one of the most moving interviews that I had was with Johnny Clegg. And although he didn't really want to go there, I pushed him to go there to talk about his own Jewish identity because he did struggle with it. He actually didn't struggle with it. He didn't really feel very much connected to his faith and to his community. And when I pushed him on why, one of the reasons that he gave in the interview was as follows, is that he grew up in Zimbabwe some of the time. In fact, he lived in Israel for a short while. He lived here. Yeah, he moved around quite a bit as a young child. But he went for extra lessons for Jewish studies lessons in Zimbabwe. I can't recall exactly which town he was in. And there were six kids that were studying extra Judaism in the afternoon. The teacher was a Holocaust survivor, and she kept making the point that 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. Each one of you six carry the responsibility of 1 million Jews. You need to go out into the world. You need to have children. You need to carry that burden or responsibility was the way it was put to him. But what he felt was that it was a burden and it was too much of a burden. And that as a young kid, he just did not feel that he wanted to carry this burden of the years of the generations before him. And it stayed with me quite a lot because when we educate our children about the Holocaust and when we talk to our children about all sorts of things in terms of religion and whether you're a Christian teaching your children about Christianity, Jew, Muslim, whatever it is, we all want our children to continue the faith that we have. A lot of our faith is burdened with tragedy and martyrdom of the past. How do we impose that upon them? Let's take news headlines and come back to that question.
In your headlines, Wuhan City in China to temporarily shut public transport. This is as it tries to halt the outbreak of the new coronavirus. Protesters in Lebanon reject new government. Violent demonstrations have continued. Deep Slute residents protest, and app helps people invest in small-scale farmers. They invest in options that will benefit the planet while making them money. Cash the full bulletin at the top of the hour.
Thanks, Anati. Time is 8:30. I'm Howard Feldman, chatting to David Abramson. He's a psychologist in private practice. This is Chai FM 101.9. This is your morning mayhem. Question I'm asking David is, how do we pass on the responsibility to our children in terms of understanding our history? And it might not even be about religion. It might be somebody within the black community in South Africa teaching their children about apartheid, not taking freedom, racial freedom, for example, for granted. How do we pass that on without it becoming too much of a burden for anyone to cope with?
It's such an important question, Howard, and I think for me, the first port of call is to ask, what are we trying to achieve here? Are we trying to give our children the message that, and fill their minds with the horrors of the world? Is that really what we're trying to do? I think rather, if we're talking about apartheid or we're talking about the Holocaust, we want to teach them about the world. We want to help them. Obviously, we need to help them to remember. But at the same time, we want to teach them right from wrong. We want to teach them how it's so difficult to stand up for right when everyone else seems to be standing up for wrong. It's really opportunities to learn. So if the idea is to teach them rather than to, push home to them about the traumas, the actual traumas, I think that's important. And I think it's also very important to keep your child in mind and to keep the age appropriateness of the information that you give them. Like, you know, when it comes to the Holocaust, I think it's completely inappropriate to tell young children about the gas chambers and to tell them how people
those kinds of details.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think for me, it's very difficult to protect our children these days. You know, there's so much information that is out there because of social media, the internet. But I do think for me what is important is that firstly, if our children do approach us, that we give them enough information, listen to what they're asking, and not too much. And then, again, the detail around it. So, for example, if a child comes in early primary school to ask you about the Holocaust, I think it's okay to say there was a time where Jews were not liked and hated, maybe, for being Jews. Mm. You know, it doesn't have to go further than that. Or maybe early primary school, talking to children about put into ghettos and how Jews were put into places where they didn't have rights and freedom, to do as they wished because they were Jewish, and with apartheid because they were just for being black. I think for me it's so important. Yes, later on, and I've done a little bit of research, and I haven't found any Holocaust education programs that are aimed at children younger than 11, 10 or 11.
That's interesting.
Which is important, because I think for me...
So are you saying there shouldn't be, or are you saying there should be?
Well, I think, again, it's very difficult to protect our children. We
today. Hear,
today you go into the playground and maybe the children in the higher grade have learnt about the Holocaust and they're throwing names around Nazi leaders, and they have questions. And I think it's important that we listen, as I say, to their question, give them enough information to answer their question, but be very careful taking their sensitivity, their anxiety levels into account, and obviously their age. And be careful. Sometimes they're not asking for too much information. They're asking for some information. And exactly, I mean, I think your point around Johnny Clegg, I think at such a young age to be made to feel that now.
So responsible,
and that you carry this burden. I think for me, understandably, would be completely overwhelming for him.
You know, one of the, one of the memories that I have as a young child, and it must have been in 19, if it was, I'm trying to think what was happening historically at the time. So it was 1977, which means I was 9 years old, and I was a fairly precocious reader, and I was reading a book called When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit, which was a story about a young child who obviously gets caught up in the war, and the pink rabbit becomes a symbol for what Hitler stole from him, i.e. his childhood. And I got it at the time. But I was reading this book, and I became quite immersed in Holocaust, at a very young age, Holocaust literature. But because there was so much going on in South Africa at the time, it was the time of the Soweto uprising. It was a time that we were becoming much more, even as young children, our parents were talking to us about what apartheid was and what group areas was and past laws. And we would see people running in the streets with those terrible vans chasing people to check passes in case they were there. And in my little mind of 9 years old, I remember finding all of these images converging and not being able to separate which was now South Africa, which was then Germany or wherever these books were set. And I would imagine that's a fairly common problem that kids find it difficult to distinguish between now and then.
And we talk about proximity. I mean, an example that I often quote is a child that I saw a while ago who suddenly, out of nowhere, really, well, it seemed to be out of nowhere, who was scared to go into cinemas here in South Africa, wouldn't want to go to a movie. And when when the child came into therapy, what actually happened, what we realized, what was, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago that
Batman.
Somebody
went into a cinema theater
at midnight and
killed a lot of people.
And this young child had heard about this. But, you know, again, this idea of proximity and not being able to integrate this kind of information felt the same danger, you know, here in South Africa, in Johannesburg, even though this happened, on the other side of the world. So I think
so proximity with regard to geography as well as time.
As well as time. And I think for me, I think it's so important that when we do speak to younger children about, about the Holocaust, that we do respond with reassurance so that we could say things like it happened a long time ago. When other people were allowed to be mean to other people. You know, we're using these words that children can understand. And that's not where we live today. We don't live in that country. And you can actually show them on the map, where Germany is and where these happens. And to talk about the rules, that we have today. And again, we could then, it's interesting. We were talking about the past, about really digging into all the, and being so honest, but children don't need to know, if we start saying we have police officers and judges and rules in this country and all over the world, which doesn't allow that to happen in countries like ours. Some parents might say, oh, hang on a second, but the police, but there's corruption.
Children, don't do that.
Need to be held. And obviously as time goes on, as they move into their, 13, 14 into their, teens, they'll be able to integrate, as you're saying, the idea of what's reality and, kind of what is history and how to put that into perspective.
Time is 8:38. I would absolutely love to hear from you. 34519, that's the SMS line, or you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. We're talking about educating our children specifically with regard to the Holocaust, but I think it's very, very relevant to all forms of trauma and tragedy that happened in prior generations. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.